Life Talk Radio presents Health and Longevity, the program dedicated to bringing you cutting-edge information and interviews that can change your life. On each edition, nutritionist, registered dietitian, and board-certified anti-aging health practitioner, Dr. John Westerdahl, will show you how to achieve a longer, healthier life using the latest breakthroughs in nutrition, wellness, and lifestyle medicine. And now, here's your host, Dr. John Westerdahl.
Welcome to Health and Longevity. I'm Dr. John Westerdahl. On today's program, we have two special guest interviews. First of all, we have Dr. Andrew Weil, called the father of integrative medicine. Dr. Weil is one of the world's leaders in rethinking how we use plants, mind-body interactions, and nutrition to heal our bodies and improve quality of life. We'll talk to Dr. Weil about integrative medicine and how it differs from conventional medicine. And we'll also talk with Dr. Paula Chance, the director of the Nutraceutical Institute at Rutgers University. Dr. LaChance will talk to us about nutraceuticals and functional foods and their role in health and nutrition. But before we get into today's exciting topics, let's hear the latest research and news affecting our health and longevity today.
Dr. Westerdahl presents the Health and Longevity News and Research Update, bringing you the most pertinent and important information about your health and longevity.
Well, olive oil use is linked with lower risk of stroke. A study reported in the journal Neurology reveals an association between olive oil consumption and a lower risk of stroke. Dr. Cecilia Samiri and her associates analyzed data from 7,625 participants in the three-city study. Olive oil consumption frequency was ascertained from dietary intake documented upon enrollment in the study and was categorized with no use of olive oil, moderate use of olive oil, or intensive use of olive oil. And during a median follow-up period of 5.25 years, 148 strokes occurred. Adjusted analysis of the data unveiled that there was a 41% lower risk of stroke among intensive olive oil users compared to those who reported not using olive oil at all. The protective association was significant for ischemic but not hemorrhagic stroke. In a second study, subjects with the highest levels of plasma oleic acid, that's a natural type of fatty acid found in olive oil, had a 73% reduction in stroke risk compared to those whose levels were the lowest. Now, olive oil is a common feature of diets consumed in countries surrounding the Mediterranean Sea and has been suggested as an important factor in the Mediterranean diet's disease protective benefits. Now, if you use olive oil in your foods and in food preparation, I recommend using only organic, unrefined, unfiltered, first cold-pressed, extra virgin olive oil. Now, this would be the best quality. I am a big believer in getting olive oil that comes from Greece, made from Koroniki olives, which are the highest in heart-healthy polyphenol antioxidants. Greek olive oil is the world's finest and the best quality. But remember, olive oil is a fat, so use it in moderation. Now, sleep length may affect cognitive aging 4 to 7 years. A study in the journal Sleep discusses how different sleep patterns over a 5-year period as people age can affect cognitive function later in life. When people get sleep in between the 6 to 8 hour time frame, the body seems to respond normally. However, sleeping more or less than 6 to 8 hours per night may induce and accelerate cognitive decline that is equivalent to 4 to 7 years of aging. The main result came out of this study was that adverse changes in sleep duration appear to be associated with poor cognitive function in later middle age, according to the author Dr. Jane Ferrari, senior research fellow in the University College London Medical School Department of Epidemiology and Public Health in the UK. The mined data from the Whitehall 2 study included more than 10,000 London-based citizens aged 35 to 55. The detrimental effects of too much, too little, and poor quality sleep on various aspects of health have begun to receive more attention, Dr. Ferrari said, given that our 24/7 society increasingly impinges on the lives of many people, it is important to consider the effects that changes in sleep duration may have on health and well-being in the long term.
Would you like to live a happier, healthier, and longer fulfilled life? Then visit us at healthandlongevityradio.com. That's one word, healthandlongevityradio.com. There you'll find valuable information and resources that can help you achieve optimal health and give you the secrets to longevity. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com. It could change your life.
Welcome back to Health and Longevity. Do you have questions about nutrition, health, or longevity? This is your chance to have them answered. On each program, Dr. Westerdahl will choose a key question from our listening audience and respond to it on the air. Due to the high volume of emails, Dr. Westerdahl cannot personally answer each question on our broadcast. If you would like to submit a question, please go to our website, healthandlongevityradio.com. Once there, you will see a button to submit your questions. And now, the question of the day.
Our question today comes from a woman that says, I've been eating plain, high fiber, low salt, no added fat, mostly vegetables, whole grains, and juices for over 6 months. Why don't my triglycerides go down? I am losing weight slowly but surely. Currently, I'm 140 pounds at 5'2". Is there anything else that I can do, or am I just impatient for results? Well, you know, a healthy weight loss should just be 1 or 2 pounds per week. And you did not state your starting weight, so I'm not sure exactly what your progress has been. But for a woman your height, ideally you should weigh around 110 to 115 pounds. Now, it sounds like you're trying to eat healthy, and that's a good thing. You state that you're drinking juices. If these are fruit juices and you are drinking a lot of them, this would contribute to a significant amount of calories in your diet and may be the factor in your elevated triglycerides. If you do eat grains, they should only be whole grains and not refined grain products, which turn quickly into sugar in the body. And also the refined carbohydrates, as well as all those fruit juices, can raise your triglycerides. So it's good that you aren't adding fats to your diet. Added fats actually contribute to more weight gain because they're concentrated in calories. But be sure to also get plenty of exercise. At least get regular exercise 3 to 4 times per week. That will help you burn that body fat more quickly.
And now, Health and Longevity's special feature, where Dr. Westerdahl interviews leading experts and personalities on vital topics important to your health and longevity.
And with me now is Dr. Paul LaChance, who's professor and executive director of the Nutraceuticals Institute at the Department of Food Science at Rutgers University. Thank you for being with us, Dr. LaChance.
Thank you very much. Pleased to be here, John.
I want to ask you about nutraceuticals. What really are nutraceuticals and functional foods?
Well, nutraceuticals are really naturally occurring bioactive compounds that have a health benefit. And so that's basically some chemical ingredients which make up the substance of plants and nature in general. And so that's the important component. Now, a functional food is a delivery system. In other words, if the ingredient or this nutraceutical is, or the series of nutraceuticals may be present in a food naturally, or it might be incorporated into a food, then we'd say that that food is a functional food. You could also take this ingredient or whatever it happens to be and incorporate it into a pill form, that we would call that a supplement. So basically, a supplement as a delivery system or a functional food for nutraceuticals. They may even be an example. Let me give a couple of examples. Garlic can be purchased as is and used because we know it has nutraceutical properties that are good for us. And we have hundreds of papers that have been published trying to show us this. On the other hand, you can buy garlic pills or supplements as a garlic pill. So you have, here's two delivery mechanisms for nutraceutical delivery. If we take a margarine, for example, and take, there's a couple of products out there now, one put out by two different manufacturers, where they're incorporating a cytostanol ester which is a chemical compound related to cholesterol that helps to depress cholesterol synthesis, which is incorporated into it. It's a functional food, but it was done by fortification of a food that we're familiar with, in this case, margarine.
Tell us a little about some of the things that you're doing there at Rutgers University in the whole area of nutraceuticals and some of the research going on, and even you're doing things in developing certain types of food products and so forth. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct, because many plants have not been completely standardized, and our interest is to start out and see if we can standardize the material at the beginning, because a number of plants are not completely botanically classified. We can't just use tradition alone. We have to see whether we can do that, and so we're beginning to sequence some of the plants that we're familiar with in New Jersey, where the Pine Barrens has at least 250 different plants that have, by tradition or otherwise, been shown to have some sort of medicinal property. And so nutraceutical property, we would say, for sure. And we'd like to examine these, and we're in the process of examining these. And we've also looked at some that are not familiar to us at all in New Jersey. Licorice would be an example of that. It grows wild in Turkey and in Mongolia, and it's never been cultivated. But it has some properties in it that seem to have some benefits if used judiciously. And so you can see the span of possibilities. There are thousands of plants that need to be examined now, and there'll be years doing that, trying to identify them and standardize them and look for their nutraceutical properties. Then we move on from that, and what we hope to do with that, incidentally, is to enhance the return to the farmer. The farmer is looking for value-added crops, and this would be so some farmers may want to grow echinacea rather than grow peaches, but that's their decision. We just have to show them that there's a market there and that there's a usefulness in the product of echinacea, in this case for immune stimulation or stimulation of the immune system, enhancing the immune system and resistance to disease. And then we're interested in, we do a lot of chemistry, and we use a patented process that we have patented at Rutgers, which is a bioassay or a cell line directed fractionation. That seems complicated, but basically what it means is that we use human cell lines of cancers of the prostate, the breast, or other kinds of cancers. And when we're analyzing for chemistry, we get so many different separations that we kind of just test each one to see which one's hot, if you will, which one's most promising, so that we don't waste a lot of time identifying thousands of compounds when in fact we can narrow it down to 50, or and then we subdivide that again and subdivide it again so that we can get to the crux of the more important compounds that have benefit, at least against human cell lines. We also have the only facility in the United States in an academic institution that's both USDA and FDA approved processing of foods for the making of primarily military foods is what where funds our operation. But we have made a number of products, for example, from blueberries. We've made a blueberry tea, which is kind of interesting and popular and increasing in popularity. And we're introducing into that more and more nutraceutical compounds.
So let's talk about those blueberries. Why are you doing that blueberry tea?
Well, blueberries two reasons. One is New Jersey's a major producer of blueberries. A lot of people don't know that, but we do a lot of that. But on top of that, blueberries have a number of compounds in them, probably related to the coloring or the chemistry of the coloring compounds, the anthocyanins that give us the color of blues and this kind of thing. And also some other compounds that seem to be emerging that we have not completely identified yet. Tufts University, other universities have looked at that. It has a very high antioxidant capacity, which is important. If you're looking for a source of antioxidants, it's natural. Blueberries is a good source, as are almonds or a number of other foods, but our interest in blueberries is from that point of view. Also, there seems to be, in an animal model at any rate, some enhancement of memory. We don't fully understand that, but we think that that needs to be explored because it could be a natural way of enhancing our, you know, using our more vegetarian-oriented diet, which I did a study on several years ago. I rated a number of diets, and the vegetarian diet is top-notch in terms of the delivery of conventional nutrients as we know them, and it looks now, if I was to redo the study, that would also hold for a number of nutraceuticals. So the secrets are really in the fruits and the vegetables more than anywhere else of the food systems that we have. Whole grains, but the problem with whole grains is only 20% of the grains that people eat In other words, we have to discard those rolls and white bread and a few other things if we're going to get the benefit of whole grains. But those seem to have some natural attributes that are worthwhile.
Let's quickly go through a few types of foods that show real promise as far as health benefits. Let's talk about heart disease first. What are some of the types of foods that you see real promise in developing food products as well as nutraceuticals?
Well, cardiovascular disease and the theory of the disease has changed in recent years to one of away from the idea of just fats being the whole issue or cholesterol being the whole issue. Not that the cholesterol is a very good marker of risk or coronary heart disease, but the fact of the matter is that the mechanism seems to be related to antioxidants, that there's an inflammation process that goes on in the arteries, triggered by one thing or another, probably poor intakes of antioxidants to begin with. We have our defensive mechanisms of C and E and selenium and other kinds of compounds that have antioxidant properties. And so there seems to be more and more promise and data showing us that the higher the intakes of antioxidant, higher in terms of balance. Now, one has to be careful. We don't mean just taking vitamin C and by the gram, as Linus Pauling used to believe. That's not the point. Once you saturate the body with vitamin C with 250 milligrams a day, you've gotten where you need to go. But you also need the vitamin E's, you need the carotenoids, and you need some of these compounds that we find in plant foods like lycopene, astaxanthin, some of these other kinds of carotenoids. There are 400 carotenoids in nature. So we haven't even begun to look at all the possibles. And so the only way you can cope with them and get them all or get some representative amount, obviously, is to eat the fruits and the vegetables. And that's what we promote in order to do that. And it does help in cholesterol lowering and the other factors that tend to be a benefit to coronary heart disease.
You know, we had a discussion yesterday about controversy when you talk about nutraceuticals as far as just isolating one compound and concentrating it versus the whole food concept. And what's your thoughts on that? Because in whole foods, you know, there are other things that may be related, that maybe there's a synergy between the what we might think is the active ingredients. Can you comment about your philosophy as far as the concept of whole foods versus just isolation of a certain compound?
I think that's a very important question because we're in a, I call it a kind of a nutrition narrow-mindedness or whatever. Because of our philosophy, we classified nutrients, which are only about 50-some-odd chemicals, by their deficiency. In other words, your vitamin C, you get scurvy. Vitamin D, you get rickets if you lack these things. And so that's what identified them to be required for life and therefore being nutrients. But the fact of the matter is that they work together. And whether they be pure nutrients or nutrients plus nutraceuticals, that's the same thing. It's a combination that works together. Folic acid, for example, is not the only thing that matters. It's the same, that whole phenomena of the benefits of decreased incidence of problems of development, spina bifida and things like that, are related to B6 intakes, they're related to magnesium intakes, they're related to B12. In other words, all of these factors have to be there at the same time. Therefore, you taking one in isolation is not the solution. The solution lies in making sure you have the array of these nutrients in the right place at the right time. And some of these nutrients are marginal in the American diet. B6 is marginal, magnesium is marginal. Folic acid has been very marginal, and so increasing one without paying attention to the others is not going to solve the problem of giving us the prevention that we really need and really see a dramatic impact on the decrease in these kinds of conditions that we would benefit, because we're getting kind of a subclinical kind of situation. You know, we cure for one and the next one becomes limiting, but nobody's measuring it. And there are other factors that are non-nutrients that complement these things. For example, we talk about beta-carotene. But beta-carotene, I happen to think, is a very important compound, not only as a precursor of vitamin A, but as a carotenoid, lycopene is very important, the coloring that gives us the red of tomatoes and other plants. And there are other series of these, zeaxanthine and many other of these carotenoids that we know little about, but we know they have antioxidant capability. And so they complement or synergize. And that's what I call it. I say, you know, you have a basic nutrients, and then you can you can synergize them with other non-nutrient kinds of nutraceuticals so that you get an even increased amount of prevention and benefit in terms of healthy functions, whatever, the, you know, trying to do this ahead of the game. In other words, what you eat now prevents disease rather than looking at it after you're sick and trying to cure with this thing. That's a hard, long way to do things and the expensive way to solve the problem.
It's more than just prevention. Many things can be used in treatment of disease and potentially reversal of certain types of diseases.
Well, that's true. You can get reversal, and that's been shown with certain kinds of diets. Whether Ornish is a good example, but that's probably not the only one. There are other people with other theories. Ornish, at least, has got recognition, and I think it's a sound one. He certainly has made an impact in terms of a number of insurance companies are actually saying this is the cheaper way to go, and they're paying the bill for people to follow that kind of an approach, to use a dietary approach to getting a reversal of plaque formation in the coronaries. I mean, that to me is dramatic.
And of course, with Dr. Ornish, everyone was on a very low-fat vegetarian diet, and of course the cholesterol and the saturated fats one part of it, but in the area you're working in, probably the phytochemicals in those plant foods play a major role as well, don't they?
I think they do. I think what we're talking about now is a double barrel approach. We're talking about the fats we used to recognize and the fact that they can be culprits if you eat the wrong ones at the wrong time, and we have a fast food industry that's loaded with this kind of stuff that we don't need. And I have shown a high correlation between these foods and the eating of these foods and the obesity rate, which is increasing dramatically in this country and around the world. It's a high correlation with almost direct correlation with the amount of eating away from home kinds of foods.
And, of course, those foods not only are high in fat and cholesterol, but they're almost totally devoid of phytochemicals.
Oh, I guess. I keep saying to people when they come out of these, where's the salad? They didn't even have a salad. And then if they do sell you a salad, it's loaded with oil. I mean, they give you these massive amounts of salad dressing. So I talk about putting texture in your salad dressing. And to me, that's not a solution. Just not a solution. One slice of lettuce and a slice of tomato and a pickle is not going to solve your problem. This is not plant food. This is not. I don't understand why we can't get people to understand that.
Well, Dr. LaChance, I want to thank you very much for the fine work you're doing there at Rutgers in researching plant foods and the phytochemistry that goes on in them and promoting more whole foods. And you're doing tremendous work, and I appreciate all the tremendous work you're doing. And where do you see the future coming?
Well, I think we're going to see a breakthrough in this area. I think it'll be recognized. There are a number of people who are trying to do that now, but I think the information is kind of preliminary. But one of the things that's been encouraging to me is I've been working quite a bit with speaking with physicians, helping them to recognize the importance of these phytochemicals and the dietary patterns and how they can have an impact on the health of their patients and in the prevention of further disease in their patients, and maybe even reversal. You know, I look back and say, wow, I gave grand rounds on this topic 4 or 5 years ago and predicted that some of these things would occur, and they have. And it's very satisfying, you know, but there's a long, long way to go.
Thank you very much.
And now we're going to an interview that I did with Dr. Andrew Weil on the island of Maui in Hawaii. We're very honored to have none other than Dr. Andrew Weil with us today on the program. And Dr. Weil is recognized internationally as a leader in integrative medicine. Dr. Weil, glad to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Dr. Weil, tell us, what really is integrative medicine?
Well, it's the medicine of the future. It's just good medicine. The official definition that I use is that it's healing-oriented medicine that takes account of whole persons, meaning body, minds, and spirits, as well as all aspects of lifestyle. It emphasizes the therapeutic relationship and makes use of all appropriate therapies, both conventional and alternative. So bringing the alternative therapies in is only one part of it. It's really shifting the focus of medicine onto health and healing, really looking at lifestyle medicine and whole persons.
Tell us a little bit, there's maybe a little confusion. You hear the different terms, complementary medicine,
yes,
integrative medicine, alternative medicine. You like integrative medicine is the best.
Well,
term.
This is the term that is being accepted in academic medicine. And I think it's a neutral term. It doesn't push buttons like alternative medicine.
Right.
It's not a feeble term like complementary medicine, which suggests that you're keeping mainstream medicine as the center and have these little garnishes around the edge of the plate. And I think it suggests inclusivity, trying to bring things together. But in practice, this is the term that's being used in academic medical centers.
So what you're doing is combining the best of modern medicine with ancient medicine.
Exactly.
Is that what's
going on? Absolutely. And the best of Western with Eastern, along with, I think, a lot of common sense, which in many cases has disappeared from many medical settings.
Yeah.
You know, it brings a lot of people to our program when they discover that there is another way out there of doing it.
And every day on our show, we talk about a meatless diet. We talk about eating more fruits and vegetables. How do you see the power of a plant-based diet? Eating more fruits and vegetables, how does that fit into integrative medicine?
Totally. I mean, as I said, we're very much focused on lifestyle, and nutrition is a major aspect of lifestyle. I think in our clinic at the University of Arizona, we often use dietary change as a primary treatment strategy. And I wish more doctors could do that, but they need to be educated about nutrition. And I think one of the recommendations we always make is that people eat more fruits and vegetables, also to learn how to substitute plant protein for some of the animal protein in the diet.
You give great advice in your newsletter that many people read all over the country, all over the world actually, about healthful living and integrative medicine. What are some tips you can give to our listeners who are trying to make that transition? You know, they haven't been eating vegetables and fruits that much. They want to get on a healthier diet. What are some practical things?
I would say, first of all, do it slowly. You know, it doesn't have to be a global change overnight. Do it gradually. Also, seek out people who have better eating habits than you do and spend more time with them. That's a great way to reinforce good eating habits. You know, with the vegetable protein, get familiar with the whole range of soy foods that are out there now, which are very different from what it was 20 years ago, and try them, experiment with them, try a different vegetable here and there. But I think that I would say the main thing is go slowly.
Look for Dr. Wild's book on our website.
To learn more about the books written by our guests and books written or recommended by Dr. Westerdahl in this program, please visit our website at healthandlongevityradio.com. There you can learn how to obtain your copy of these valuable and informative books. Search each page for yourself and see how you can live a happier, healthier, and longer life. Visit us today at healthandlongevityradio.com. Once again, that's healthandlongevityradio.com.
That's all for this week. Until our next broadcast, this is Dr. John Westerdahl wishing you the best of health and longevity.
This has been Health and Longevity with Dr. John Westerdahl, a production of Life Talk Radio. Join us again next week on the same station and time for Health and Longevity. The preceding information on this program has been general information about your health and is not to be taken as professional medical advice, nor is it intended to serve as a substitute for medical attention. Do not change your diet or exercise habits without guidance from your medical doctor, especially if you have health problems or are on medication. Do not change your medications without the advice and supervision of your medical doctor. If you have a medical condition, we encourage you to seek the consultation of a medical doctor experienced in dietary change and lifestyle medicine. And as always, we wish you the best of health.